Last week I was amazed. In my rush to put a load of clothes in the washing machine, my phone slipped in two. My wife, Sarah, and I realised mid-cycle, and I was ready just to give up. She said, "Trust me, put in a bag of rice, leave it a little while, and try turning it on again." A day or so later, I tried turning it on again, but with no signs of life. Again, I was ready to accept defeat. But once more, Sarah said, "Trust me, leave it a little longer." So about a week or so later, to my amazement, it turns on. A resurrected phone. Whether it's our experience with a busted phone or something else, we've all experienced crisis moments in life where things just look hopeless, where the odds are just stacked against us. But in unexpected ways, in surprising ways, things turn around. Amazing moments, awe-inspiring moments. And this is one of those crisis moments in Habakkuk. The situation is hopeless. Things are not going well. In fact, things haven't been going well for some time now. If you remember back to our series on the book of Exodus a few months ago, you'll remember that we saw the beginning of Israel as a nation. In Habakkuk, we're at the other end of that story, or thereabouts. Israel have gone from slaves in Egypt into a kingdom with land, a temple, a line of kings. But by the time we get to Habakkuk, things have not gone so well. There's been civil war. The nation splits. Israel in the north, Judah in the south. There's corruption everywhere. And to top it all off, unfaithfulness to their God, which God warned them from the beginning would put everything at risk. And this was what one of the last kings of Judah realized, King Josiah, in 2 Kings chapter 22. He says, "Great is the Lord's anger that burns against us because those who have gone before us have not obeyed the words of this book. They haven't acted in accordance with what is written concerning us." And this is where we are now in the story of the Bible. And God's going to use this prophet Habakkuk to speak directly to his people Judah. But Habakkuk, well, he is in over his head with the problems going on in Judah. You see, Habakkuk has spent his whole life seeking Judah's flourishing. But now all he's seeing is their ruin. And it's in this mess that God is going to work in a surprising way, an amazing way, an awe-inspiring way, but in a kind of terrifying kind of way too. So confronted with the state of Judah, Habakkuk has a whinge. He cries out. He blows up. He rants to God. He goes to God with a prayer of complaint. You can pick it up with me in verse 1 to verse 4. "How long, Lord, must I cry for help, but you don't listen? Or cry out to you violence, but you don't save? Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife and conflict abounds. Therefore, the law is paralyzed, and justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous, so that justice is perverted." Now, this might sound like a Saturday night in the valley, but that's the problem. It's talking about Judah, the Israelites, God's people. And the problem for Habakkuk is that he knows God is good and just. So why does he keep letting this happen? People of God should not be like this, which is why Habakkuk is going to God with a complaint. Why don't you do something about this? Where are you? Why are you letting this happen? And in chapter 1, verse 5, God answers Habakkuk. You are going to see something you'll hardly believe. Look with me at verse 5. Look at the nations and watch. Be utterly amazed, for I'm going to do something in your days that you wouldn't believe even if you were told. Now, there are just some things you just have to see to believe. Like the Cowboys beating the Roosters. Yeah, Trump for president. You wouldn't believe it if you were told. And whatever God is going to do, it is going to be one of these moments for Judah and for Habakkuk. It is going to astound them. So take a look what God goes on to say in verse 6. Habakkuk, I'm not absent here. I'm not silent. I'm raising up the Chaldeans. I am raising up Babylon. Now, if you know anything of the unfolding story of the Bible, Judah's history didn't just end with them going backwards. It ends with them being conquered and captured by Babylon. And now this is the rise of Babylon. In fact, verse 6 to 11, it's as though God is reading out Babylon's resume. Or to put it in other words, why Babylon are God's choice instrument for judging and punishing what's going on in Judah. Because there are just times where the right tool fits the job. Like a morning coffee for the commute to work, like a sharp chisel to notch out joins in timber, or that spatula that bends perfectly to scrape out that cake mix from the bowl. They're the right tools for the job. In Judah's case, Babylon, they're that perfect instrument for dealing with what's going on. God says to Habakkuk, trust me, I'm bigger than this. I'm bigger than the mess of Judah. I know it feels shocking. I know it feels like you're out of your depth. I've got the right tool for the job. Trust me. Pick up as Habakkuk responds to God in verse 12. Verse 12, are you not from everlasting? O Lord, my God, my Holy One, you'll never die. You, Lord, have appointed them, you've appointed Babylon, to execute judgment. You, my rock, have ordained them to punish. And just, again, notice how Habakkuk gets who God is. He gets that God is eternal and unchanging. He gets that God has always been who he is and will always be who he is. He gets that God is holy, pure and righteous. He gets that God is their personal God, my rock, who isn't letting the mess within Judah go unchecked. God won't. He can't. Yet at the same time, Habakkuk doesn't believe what he's hearing, which is what he goes on to say next. Babylon, really? Come on. They are worse than we are. How long are you going to tolerate them? They can't possibly be the right tool for the job. Look at verse 13. Your eyes are too pure to look on evil. You can't tolerate wrongdoing. Why then do you tolerate the treacherous Babylon? Why are you silent when the wicked Babylon swallow up those Judah more righteous than they? How can you use a tool like that? In other words, yeah, we're bad, but they are worse. And God goes on to answer Habakkuk in chapter 2, verse 2. God tells Habakkuk to make this vision, he's going to show him clear and direct. Write this in big letters, like a billboard on Stamford Road. Pick it up with me in verses 3 and 4. The revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end and will not prove false. Though it lingers, wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. See, the enemy is puffed up. His desires are not upright. The righteous person will live by his faithfulness. To put it another way, if it looks like the bad guys are winning, keep trusting me. Stay faithful. Because in verses 5 to 20, God says, don't worry, they'll get what's coming for them. They'll get their justice. Because for God's enemies, in verses 5 to 20, God brings five guilty verdicts, five woes against those who are unfaithful, full of pride, bent towards evil, and cause suffering, which is embodied in Babylon. Now, God says, I know how bad they are. I know the suffering that they cause. I know they're full of pride, and they will be punished, no matter who they are, whether it's you or whether it's Babylon. Because verse 20 puts all of this into perspective. The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. So Habakkuk, stop complaining. So God's first message to Judah is that I'm bigger than your mess. I'm sending Babylon to discipline you, but trust me. God's second message to Judah is keep trusting me. I'm bigger than Babylon. I am bigger than the mess of the world. Trust me. I want to step you forward in your mind 500 years to another awe-inspiring moment. It's another one of those moments where the wicked hem in the righteous, where it appears that justice is perverted. Another situation of extreme bloodshed, wrongdoing, shame, and rejection of God. I'm talking about the cross. The brutal execution of the one who claimed to be the Son of God and backed up his claims with action. Because of that, he was executed by crucifixion on a cross at the hands of Rome and with the help of the Jews. He was a man who was despised and rejected by his own people. He was a man of sorrows who knew what grief was. He was a man who people didn't value. He was wrongly oppressed and afflicted, and yet he didn't open his mouth. He had never done anything wrong. He was a man beaten beyond human appearance. And so it seemed he was a man afflicted and struck down by God. It might look hopeless. It might look like evil is winning here. But God is doing something utterly amazing. Look on. Later on in the book of Acts, Paul is preaching about this to a bunch of Jews in a synagogue in Acts chapter 13. And he comes to the climax of his sermon and he's going to quote directly from Habakkuk. Because again, God is turning things around in the resurrection. Again, God's bringing ultimate justice from an ugly situation. And again, those on the wrong side of him are going to face the consequences. Take a look on the screen at Paul's words from verse 39. Therefore, I want you to know that through Jesus, the forgiveness of sins is proclaimed to you. Through him, everyone who believes is set free from every sin. A justification you were not able to obtain under the law of Moses. Take care what the prophets have said doesn't happen to you. Here comes Habakkuk. Look and wonder. I am doing something in your days that you wouldn't believe, even if someone told you. What Paul means is that I am bigger than this. On the cross, Jesus stood in the place of sinful people and took upon himself the judgment and punishment for their sin. Jesus didn't receive any limited and measured judgment. He received God's total judgment and punishment, which then justifies anyone and everyone who believes in him. Sets us free from every sin in a way that the law of Israel could never do. There is peace through Jesus. There is forgiveness for every sin through Jesus. There is a justification for you through Jesus. This is how God both judges and saves. And we are spared from judgment and given salvation when we believe and go on believing. Because when we live by faith, we live trusting Jesus, then we'll live. The whole unfolding story of the Bible, which Habakkuk is a part, is a foreshadowing of what God would ultimately do in Jesus. Through Jesus' life, death, resurrection, he delivers us from and defeats our greatest enemies, sin, Satan, and death. God's message to us is, trust me. In the mess and the crisis of life, keep trusting me. I am bigger than your sin. I am bigger than your suffering. Trust me. Now, I am not sure what particular sins and sufferings you've had, or you have, or will have in life. But I am deeply persuaded of two things: that sin and suffering have invaded your life, and that they'll always be there this side of heaven. Also, that there's been some time or another where we too, like Habakkuk, have wandered or have cried out to God, "Where are you? Why are you letting this happen? This doesn't make sense." And God says to us, look at the death and resurrection of Jesus. Look there for your answers. Look and wonder at who I am. I am bigger than all your sin and suffering. Trust me. Because in Jesus, God became a man. He became like one of us. He experienced life as we do. Jesus became like you in every way, so that he could heal you in every way. You see, when we look at his life and death, we see that he does join us in our suffering. Jesus was deeply misunderstood by his parents, brothers and sisters, closest friends. Lies were spread about him and shamed his reputation. People tried to use him for their own ends. He suffered attempts of Satan to question his identity as a beloved son of God. He suffered physical abuse. He suffered humiliation as he was stripped naked and hung on public display. He suffered the spiritual torment of having all of God's judgment fall on him. Experiencing suffering we can only scarcely imagine. And yet at the same time, none of this held him down. None of this had the last say in his life. None of this ruined him. Jesus died and he rose. He is alive. He shows us that the suffering we experience is not okay, that it is wrong, and he shows us that he has overcome it. So if you're with Jesus, it will not have the last say in your life too. And when Jesus comes back, those who have caused unjust suffering will get justice. So, because of this relationship we have with God, let's be honest with him, with our feelings. Let's let the sadness, the fear, the frustration and the anger leak out of our hearts to him, knowing that he's there, knowing that he has done something, and knowing that he is doing something about it. I don't know what your circumstances are this morning, but maybe God is telling you something. Maybe God is telling you something unbelievable today. Something amazing and awe-inspiring. That he himself has dealt with your sin and your suffering once and for all, by dying and rising for you. So will you trust that? Will you go on keeping trusting in that? God said to Habakkuk, I'm bigger than your sin. I'm bigger than your enemies, so keep trusting me. And at the cross we see the same God. We see our God and Saviour saying to us, I am bigger than your suffering. I am bigger than your sin. In fact, I am bigger than your greatest enemy. Trust me.